Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never change anything.
Thank you. Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Have you ever thought about reverse engineering to be more successful? Hey, it's Gary Cox just leaving the airport after just arriving. And I wanted to talk about this concept of reverse engineering. And a lot of people, they focus on the plan, the idea, as opposed to getting things out there and making them happen. There's several ways that we can apply reverse engineering. You can do it in relationships. You can do it in business. I'll give you an example how somebody could do a better job in starting a business by reverse engineering. In other words, we kind of do it backwards. What most people do is they have an idea and they want to get a business going or something. And you can use these principles for anything, whether you're in business or not. And what they figure out is, okay, you know, I want to sell this product or do this service and help people. And boy, wait a minute, I've got to get a logo and I've got to get a mission statement and oh my goodness, the business cards, and let's spend weeks and weeks on the right logo. Oh no, that logo's not good. Let's go get another logo. And in the meanwhile, we're wasting time when what we need to do is just get our stuff out there and worry about reverse engineering, worry about the logo and all those other stuff. If you're not doing it this way, you can use this, oh, I got to have the right logo and the right business card and the right this and the right that. You'll end up using that as an excuse to not taking action and pulling the trigger and making things happen. With my team, I refer to it as just open the doors, get the store open. You know, if you're worrying about everything being perfect, you'll spend more time worrying about everything being just perfect as opposed to what you're supposed to be doing in your business. Your business is designed to create an income. And if you're spending more of your time worrying about the perfect color of a logo, you'll never get any results. That's why you have to reverse engineer. Make sense? So stop and think about some areas in your life that maybe you're spending a little bit more time running those wheels about ideas and the way things have to be done before they get done, and just go ahead and reverse and engineer it. Just get it done, put it out there, and then you can figure out the issue and how to solve things as you go. Really, a lot of people are more successful doing things that way. And if you're not doing it this way, why are you not taking action? Maybe because you're so, you know, caught up in all these little tiny little details that really, yes, they do matter, but you can go overboard to the point that they overwhelm you, and then they prevent you from pulling the trigger, getting more results. I'll give you a quick example. My Beyond First Class Mastermind event, this is where people meet me in Florida. I put them in my airplane. I fly them to the Bahamas for about 4 or 5 days, and we do coaching, and it's just an incredible experience for people. And I remember the number one promoter at the time, this was years ago, the number one promoter in the country, he said, "Gary, that would never work. Do you think people are really going to pay to spend time with you and fly to some island and want to learn from you?" And I said, "Yeah." So I reverse engineered. I started promoting it, and at that time I was flying a Learjet. But when I started promoting it, I had never even flown a Learjet in my life. I thought it was going to be really easy because even though I was a pilot, I thought it was going to be easy to get into a Learjet. Whoa, boy, was I wrong. I reversed engineered and made a promise that I had to deliver. So I had to go ahead and get my training in a Learjet. If I had done it the other way around, I probably never would have done it. And if I remember correctly, when I started promoting it in the media, my first sale was $14,000. All because I reversed engineered. So don't get so wrapped up in the detail to the point that it stops you from getting to the point of making and pulling that trigger to get the result that you're looking for, all right? So open the doors, make things happen, and reverse engineer.
When you've never done something in your life before and you're doing it for the very first time, here's a very simple and effective way that you can quickly find out exactly what you need to do in order to achieve it. The best way that I know how to accomplish something is through reverse engineering the process. You see, I like this approach because it does not solely depend on someone formally taking you under their wing. You know, although that's the most ideal way to do it, the truth is you and I are not always going to have the luxury of having an ideal mentor at our disposal, right? We're not going to do it. Reverse engineering allows you to create virtual mentors out of virtually anybody that you identify is getting the kind of results that you want. Now, you may have heard of this phrase, success leaves clues, or you may have heard it this way, success leaves a trail. What this means is whatever it is that you want to do, chances are pretty good that someone else has probably already accomplished it, or at least they've achieved something similar, right? Scriptures already tell us that there is absolutely nothing new under the sun. So this is what we know. And granted, there are special cases where this rule of thumb certainly doesn't apply to the letter, but we can all agree that this idea or concept of reverse engineering, the essence of it or the wisdom behind it is always true. Reverse engineering is simply a process of discovering the most important principles and pathways that lead us directly to our desired outcomes, starting from the end result that we want and then working our way backward to where we are. Tim Ferriss, the best-selling author of The 4-Hour Workweek, The 4-Hour Body, and most recently The 4-Hour Chef, has gotten this concept of reverse engineering down to a science. In fact, in his last book, The 4-Hour Chef, he actually goes into a very special type of reverse engineering called meta-learning. In general, here's how you reverse engineer anything that you want to accomplish. Number one, the first thing you want to do is get a clear picture of what it is you want to accomplish. You must establish your desired outcome. Number two, you've got to identify a real or virtual mentor that has repeatedly gotten the kind of success that you want. Step number three, study and then model their approach. And then step number four, modify your approach until you get what you want. Now, in this process, if you want to accelerate your success, I recommend you use Tim Ferriss's DS3 framework. You can find out more about this specifically in his book, The 4-Hour Chef. But remember, work backward from the end result that you want to where you are starting from. Okay, here's Tim Ferriss's formula. The D stands for deconstruction. Break down your desired outcome in its most basic moving parts. The basic objective here is to identify what actually goes into making your ambition successful. That's deconstruction. Now, the first S stands for selection. This is where you establish the first 20 or the most important 20% that gives you the 80 or 90% of the results you want. Everything that you want to accomplish always can be broken down to the least amount of moving parts. That's what you want to do. It's called blocking. Here is where you want to selectively block out all of the moving parts into their essence. Okay, the essence of the 20%, that's selection. The second S is sequencing. This is where you put the most important building blocks into the right order of learning, the right sequence. Here is where you put the most basic building blocks into their right order of learning. This is key. In sequencing, you want to always begin with elements that will yield you small, quick wins on the front end. And the reason why you want to do this is so that you build what I call winner's momentum. This ensures that you stay compliant to the process. The most common reason why people fail is not because they lack the ability to do something, but simply they lack the consistency in complying to the process. You have a better chance of winning when you set yourself up to win first. That's sequencing, okay? Putting things in the right order of learning. Now, the last S that Tim talks about is called stakes. Here is where you kickstart your commitment and you bake in personal motivation in the process. Whenever you want to accomplish anything, especially if you've never done it before, what ensures your compliance to the process over the long run will be not what you stand to gain, it's not the payoff, but actually what you have to lose. As humans, personal motivation is most sustainable when the threat of losing something we care about is constant and immediate. When perceived pain for not doing something is more painful than actually doing something, that's when we're motivated to take action, period. That's how we are as humans. Pain motivates us to move the most. It's that simple. Now, when it comes to accomplishing your desired outcome, make sure that you make the stakes high enough, painful enough, that it motivates you to stay the course. You got it? The real secret to accomplishing anything significant, especially stuff that you've never done before, is reverse engineering the process. Uncovering the blueprint, making sure that you make the stakes high enough that they motivate you to take consistent, committed action, and then comply to that blueprint until you get what you want. Got it? When you faithfully do this, my friend, you will not have to worry about finding success, because success will have its uncanny way of finding you. When you reverse engineer it, that's what happens. Well, at least most of the time. All right. Well, guys, I hope that what I just shared serves you well. Go out and apply it, test it, and I'm really interested to find out how reverse engineering works for you. Okay, so make sure you come back and share in the community. Share with the community, comment on the blog here, whatever it is. But take action, guys, and remember, in all that you do, finish well. I'll talk to you next time.
Momentum is the key to success. Hello, welcome to another episode of WWW Winners Wednesday Word. It's Chinadin here, and the word for today is momentum. Now, what is momentum? There are a lot of definitions and descriptions out there to try and explain what momentum is. But I have one definition that has really made things simple for me to understand. And it goes like this. Momentum is the strength or force created by a series of events. Momentum is the strength or force created by a series of events. Now you think about it. Let's just focus on the idea of the one particular phrase that really gets to me. Series of events. Now, those three words define everything. It's not one event. It's a series of events. Now, you ask yourself, do I have momentum in my marriage? Do I have momentum in my business? Do I have momentum in my relationship? Anything. Momentum is created by a series of events. What actions are you taking consistently every single day? Now, you think about it, a lot of times the people that we admire, the entrepreneurs, the successful athletes, just even the people in our own lives. And you think about it, how did they maintain the momentum? How did they create momentum? I was having a word with my mentor about a few days ago, and we realized that the truth about it is that momentum doesn't just come from taking one action. It comes from taking the action continuously, a series of events. Now, the way momentum works is that you just keep taking those actions consistently. Whether you get results or not, you just keep taking it. And eventually, you will find out that you just need one single time, one single event, and it will just change everything. Because you've been consistent in your actions, the momentum you will see will be crazy. As a leader, I want to ask you now, are you taking continuous actions? Are your team, the people that you're leading, do they know what you're doing? Because I believe that we are all born leaders. So have momentum in your family, in your marriage, whatever it is, in your workplace, anything. It comes from a series of events. If you just think about the greats, for example, the great athletes like Michael Jordan, Ray Lewis, and you name all of these athletes, and they keep on going. Serena Williams. And you just think to yourself, how did they get the momentum to continuously and successively win? How? It came from taking consistent actions. Now, this is a key important fact. It's a series of events. Not one time event, not an annual event, but a series of events. What are you doing consistently? What are you doing seriously? So make sure you get that goal. Because if you haven't achieved that goal, it's because of two things. You're not taking consistent actions, or the timing is just on the way. Now, before I end this, I just want you to think about this. You want momentum in your business, in your family, in your workplace, in your relationship, whatever it is. What are you doing daily to work towards that? Let's say your relationship. What are you doing with your partner every single day to work towards that? In your business, what actions are you taking every single day, continuously, consistently, to get those targets you want to meet, to meet the goals you want to get? In your education, how often are you studying every single day to get that? Momentum applies to everything, because even in terms of actual understanding what momentum is, it is really just a continuously series of events that then sparks something. You just need one event that you can do continuously. A series of events. You just keep on doing it.
What's up? It's Owen and May sitting here in Miami South Beach. We're actually in downtown Miami, so I made that up. But we're sitting here right now in downtown Miami, just coming out of the World Summit. And what we want to do was talk about an important phenomenon that's a secret, which you're unaware of.
How much money you got? 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 A lot.
And I want you to imagine it like being a little laser pointer on the ground. You're a little kitten chasing around a laser pointer. You don't know what's happening. It's driving you. It's running you. And what could it be? It's called the winner effect. And what we're going to discuss today is how the winner effect is intertwined with your integrity, keeping the promises that you make to yourself, and being in integrity with others, how it affects your winner effect, and how that becomes an upwards or a downward spiral.
So what I want you to imagine right now is that moment or that thing that you promised to yourself that you would do for sure. You're going to get it done. And I want you to picture that moment when you let it slip through the cracks. How did that feel? How did that affect you? Did you think about it? And then on to the next situation, the next moment, the next promise. Did you keep that promise? Maybe you didn't. You let it fall through your fingers. How did that feel? What did it lead to? That's what we're talking about. And what it is, that self-integrity, that winner effect, is if you do not keep your word to yourself, if you do not execute on what you said you would do, every single one of those decisions that you make, every single time you don't keep that promise, it bleeds onto your physiology, your psyche. It makes you feel less of a person. You can't trust yourself, and you don't execute as hard as you can execute on what you want to accomplish. What's your experience with this?
So, for me, this is a very, very, very important topic, because this is something that affected me for growing up, probably for a couple decades, which is that as a human being, what happens is that you have this thing called the winner effect. There's a book called The Winner Effect, which we could even link to in this video.
Sure.
And what winds up happening is that when you feel like you're winning, you get this sort of surge of brain neurotransmitters, whether that's serotonin, dopamine, acetylcholine, GABA. You can look these up, okay? You can Google these if you want. But basically what happens is that you get more access to your mind. You start to become sure of yourself. So, I mean, this is really, really funny, but even in public speaking, if you see somebody who's kind of like, well, what's happening there? Their winner effect has actually been sucked out of them, and they can't even think clearly. So the winner effect, you start to feel very euphoric. They've even seen this with things like boxing, where if a boxer goes against a really tough opponent and he loses 5 or 6 times in a row, that'll actually lower his winner effect. So oftentimes, even in boxing, what they'll do is they'll put you against a weaker opponent, less weak opponent, less weak opponent, and because you're on this run and feeling super confident, your winner effect is up, and then you can be more effective and you feel good, and you wind up going on this awesome run. There's also a book called Flow, which talks a little bit about this, which basically what they say is that, say that you're going down a ski hill, and, you know, say you're a moderate skier, but the ski hill is too easy, you don't really get the winner effect off it because you don't feel like you're winning. If you go too steep, then what happens is that you just feel crappy. But if you go on just the perfect one that really challenges you, but that you can still do and you can win, you go into what's called a flow state. Well, in many ways, that flow state is kind of correlated to the winner effect, right? You have one book called The Winner Effect, another book called Flow. These are just really different books that are talking about the same kind of feeling that you can feel. There's no one perfect model for whether the winner effect or flow. But whatever the case, when you get that flow or when you get that winner effect, you feel awesome. And so imagine right now that you were just out talking to a million different people and all of them are being super nice to you. What would start to happen? You start laughing, you start having fun, you start feeling euphoric, and then the more people that you're talking to,
open up. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's, yeah. It's a beautiful feeling. So it gets addictive with, say, socializing. So that same thing, that winner effect, what Maze is trying to drive towards here is that every time that you keep a promise to yourself and are integrity with yourself, and every time that you keep a promise to somebody else and are integrity to somebody else, what winds up happening is that it shoots up that winner effect, and that begins the upward or downward spiral.
I'm glad you brought flow into it, because about a year ago, some of our students, some of our clients asked me, how do you get into this flow state? How do you do it? And it allowed me to come up with an exercise that really puts you in that place so you get a reference experience for what it is. And what it is making whatever you're doing, whatever skill set you're trying to cultivate, whatever life goal you have, making it very achievable, breaking it down into small parts, and truly, truly celebrating every aspect of, even if it's the most minute win, right? So let's say you're cultivating social skills. Let's say even just saying hi to a person, if that's outside your norm, right? That is to be celebrated 100%. Not faked, but truly, truly celebrated. Going into your physiology, if it doesn't shift how you feel about yourself, truly celebrating it, feeling that in your body, that was a win. That was truly a win. And if you don't feel that way, again, putting it in your body, that was absolutely life-changing for me. And then stacking these little micro wins back to back to back to back to back to back. It's impossible to not be in a flow state, to not feel that confidence when you're achieving win after 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 win. It's impossible not to be in that space. So having those very, very, even if it's amazing to have that silver lining of something that's very challenging, but you still accomplished it. That's cool. When you get in that pocket, amazing. Ride that wave. But even to have something very, very small and having the discipline to celebrate that tiny win, that is what gets you into momentum, into a place where you can really start dominating, even in those silver linings, where it's very challenging, but maybe you won't get it, but maybe you will. That's what puts you in that place where you can knock those out back to back to back to back to back.
Yeah, I mean, anytime that we've ever helped someone with, say, getting better socially, and we're saying, okay, we're going to go talk to a lot of people. And what you'll see is that if you make the goal that I'm just going to talk to a lot of people, I'm just going to meet a lot of people today, every single time that you went to talk to somebody, you celebrate that win. What happens is that you're in integrity with yourself. And when you stack those wins of being in integrity with yourself and you say, That was my goal here. And you're like, I'm integrity with myself. You get into a flow state. It's like if you're coaching somebody to do diving and you get them to start diving off the diving board that they're scared of. If they do it again and again and again, they'll start getting in a flow state. They'll start wanting to run up and jump off the diving board. What happens? You've seen this on a diving board, this exact same effect, where you think about jumping off the diving board and you don't do it and you back off. Well, now you're not keeping your promise to yourself and you start to lose that winner effect. You've probably experienced that, right? Well, I want you to think about that same diving board analogy where if you push through that fear and do it, you keep that promise to yourself, or, you know, maybe you promised your friends that you do, that you jump off the diving board and you did it, how that elevates your self-confidence, it elevates your winner effect. Yeah. Well, think of what happens if you just keep shirking on it and skipping it and making excuses. Your winner effect goes down. Well, think what happens if you do that again and again. Now, what you really got to do here then is look at the upward spiral or the downward spiral. If you're in this super great mood, you don't necessarily need to do anything super self-destructive to feel happy because you're already happy. But let's say that you're in a horrible mood because you're breaking promise after promise yourself. Well, now you feel so crappy about yourself that you want to numb yourself. Maybe you watch too much TV, watching a bunch of reruns. Maybe you're sitting there using drugs or alcohol to medicate that shame that you have, or some other kind of low vibration energy thing to medicate that shame. And what happens then is that then you say, I'm going to stop watching the TV. I'm going to stop taking drugs or drinking alcohol, which then you break that promise even more and more, which then further downs your winner effect. And now what's happening is you're breaking your promise yourself. You're breaking your promises to others. Your winner effect is going down. And then you actually need further self-destructive habits in order to cope. Meanwhile, if you're actually feeling good and then you're engaging in good, healthy habits, now you're keeping those promises to yourself and you're moving up. So you've got to be thinking about these little small decisions that you're making and saying, every time I make a promise to myself, every time you make a promise to yourself, that is going to raise your winner effect and move you closer to that desirable upward spiral.
In contrast to before, actually, because I've definitely grown as a person, as I've cultivated that self-integrity too. I think that's something to take into account. It's like it's consistency. And not putting the world on your shoulders, right? When the world is on your shoulders, be prepared for it, yes. And this will prepare you for it. Mm-hmm. But it's taking the pebble and putting it on your shoulder. Mm-hmm. That's really where the growth is, where the momentum is going to build. That self-integrity is going to be cultivated. And that winner effect is just going to propel you into the
Got it. Yeah, sure. I mean, and I like what you said with the pebble, because what you're saying is, by a pebble, I think what you mean is that you define your own criteria and then you celebrate that win. And what you're doing is you're making a criteria proactively, not making some out-of-reach goal that you're not going to reach. Yeah. You look at it realistically. Remember that same ski hill analogy, right? You don't pick something so hard you don't get in a flow state. You don't pick something so easy that you don't get in a flow state. You pick something right around a high difficulty level, but that you can achieve. And then as you keep keeping those promises to yourself, what winds up happening is that, again, you get more into a flow state, you get more into a winner effect, and then there's more power behind what you're doing. And I guess this would be my last thought about this, is that it's really a beautiful experience when you meet somebody who's in that upward spiral of keeping promises to themselves, having integrity to others, and getting in that winner effect and seeing them accomplishing more and more, but also seeing that beautiful light in the eye that they're getting from that. And it's really an inspiration to the world. So I hope that this video inspired you to be that inspiration to the world, because when you do that, by the way, it's not just about benefiting your life. I found it, I'm sure you found the same thing, that when you see other people doing that, it's so inspiring, you will inspire other people. And that's also a long-term promise that you can make to yourself, is not just to inspire yourself to have a great life, but to be an inspiration, the light for others. So really enjoyed this winner effect topic.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, bro.
Till next time.
We had a fun time here in Miami. We're actually just about wrapping up the summit, so it's been a long one in just in downtown Miami.
Damn.
Another one for the books. See you soon.
All right. Today's It's My House is titled The Original Mobile Home Reverse Engineered. And what we're waiting on, she'll probably be on tomorrow. Darlene Lewis who runs Burnett Lewis Employment Finder, she helps ex-offenders, returning citizens, get jobs, and she's done a stellar job for the last, I think, 34 years and counting. She was operating out of an office and she's setting up a new office, place for her office, I'll put it that way, using a pop-up strategy or a tent. And we'll be going that way as well, with, because we're looking at the materials. Instead of, you know, brick and mortar, which you can't move that and it's classified as real estate, and even with if you're using wood. But I like the tent setup, well, the tent material setup. For a few reasons, zoning-wise, and then you can assemble it. If you go on YouTube, there are people that are basically homesteading in tents, glamping. I saw a video yesterday. This guy and his family, they live in a 2,000-square-foot tent, and it is pimped out. It's got air conditioning, heating, it's insulated, living room, dining room, bedroom, kids' room. It's just made from, you know, primarily from canvas. Stuff that you would make a tent with, and they classify it as a tent. And they can just pack it up and move it anywhere in the world that they want to. So we're going to be talking a lot about tents because we're going to be gearing what we do to a very high degree using tenant materials, and that is a trend. Now, when most people look at a, what do you call it? Well, you mentioned the term tent cities. Typically, it's related to homeless, but there's another demographic of people that are, like I say, they're glamping, they're setting up homesteads, and it's just a choice of building materials. They're not using brick and mortar. They're building with canvas. I mean, this stuff, and thank God for YouTube. I mean, you got people in the Arctic. I watched a series of videos yesterday and last night as well, and early this morning, where, you know, they address a lot of issues and whatnot. Let's see. Kind of quiet today. We had a lively discussion yesterday. Judge Joe Brown was in, so you can play back if you go to It's My House Archives here on Facebook. What do you call it? Blog Talk. You can play that back as many times as you want. That's the third time the judge has been in. And he was all on for about maybe the last 5 minutes or so of the show, last 2 to 5 minutes of the show, his call dropped. Ugh, excuse me. But it was good. So we're going to take a couple of calls here and then probably shut it down because, like I said, we're gearing up for a delivery, and then tomorrow we want to do this thing on reverse engineering on our goal, because matter of fact, I'll share the goal with you, and we'll probably be working on reverse engineering it for the rest of this week. It's Wednesday already, so we got just 2 more days.
Hear ye, the coach's in session. The coach's in session now. Here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge. Here come the judge. Here come the judge. Here come the judge. judge. Here comes the judge.
Okay, like I said, if you missed out on the Judge Joe Brown, he did nearly 2 hours on yesterday, but like a minute, I mean, 2 hour, let's say 1 hour and 50 minutes, because the call dropped, his call dropped. So did a solid 1 hour 50 minutes. If you go to our blog talk page, It's My House, you can play. That's the third time we've had him on. So you can play back yesterday's audio, you know, of that is as many times as you like. Today's topic, and we're going to call this a trending topic day. I think Harvey Weinstein, that sentencing is today. Almost the middle of March, you know, time to go out and play again and lose sight of those New Year's goals. And so we're trying to keep that fresh in our mind. So that's what we'll cover reverse engineering today, tomorrow, and probably Friday, along with trending topics for the rest of the week, too. The original mobile home, which last Friday, now speaking about cooperative economics, we put that into motion on the It's My House level. Darlene Lewis needed a new office location. Sunday, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before last, Pleasant Stephens came up with the idea of tents so we can have pop-up meetings and won't be burdened with paying a fee every week, being restricted to hours that we can hold events, hold meetings on ground, whether we can do our own catering, all that kind of stuff. So I, you know, suggested that to Darlene Lewis last Friday. I put up the first, she liked the idea, so I put up 50, that's $50. She put up 50, and she placed the order last Friday. So the tent is due to come, and she ordered one that's like 300 square feet, and that will be her new office, which she can fold that up and move it to other places. But anyway, a small, tiny example of cooperative economics and that's why I played one of the audios this morning on momentum. So we're going to take that little small example of momentum, because it's not Friday yet. Okay. We, during the second hour of the podcast last Friday, she called in at 11 a.m. last Friday, Eastern Standard Time. All right. And Robin was basically running the show, so I took Darlene's call offline. All right. Sent her $50. She received that. She put another 50 with it, and then she made place the order. Now, I also sent her two tents that she can order from. And I don't have anything to do with those tents. It was something I saw on Amazon. Screenshotted it, sent it to her. This all during the podcast, the second half of the podcast last Friday, this past Friday. It has not even been a week yet. And she ordered it coming directly to her. All right. So we got a little bit of momentum going. That's our mustard seed momentum. And the reason why I play the reverse engineering pieces is because I want to build on that mustard seed momentum where we do this 98 more times. 98 more times. All right. But anyway, we got something revved up. In any event, so we can get to the point where somebody like Warren Houston wants to bring just Joe Brown or Robin, because that Robin set up that whole podcast yesterday. And I don't know where she is today. I haven't heard from her at all. I'll send her a note. Then, with 100 points of distribution, we can pass the hat within that 100 points and pay for airline tickets, speaker fees, help people start businesses. So, like I said, we got actually 97. We had to do what Darlene Lewis did, 97 more times. 97 more times. All right. But we got some momentum going. All right. It's a teeny bit, but we got something going. All right. Anyway, so this morning, just looking at the news, let's see, Harvey Weinstein is supposed to be sentenced. I don't know if he's been sentenced yet. Bernie Sanders, I'm on Yahoo News. Bernie Sanders, the headline reads, Bernie Sanders spreads the blame for his decline. What else is trending? Well, those are the two big trending topics. Oh, of course, coronavirus. That's big in the news too. I think somewhere in New York State. All right. Okay. Harvey Weinstein. Judge hands down prison sentence to Harvey Weinstein or Stein. All right. Let me click on it and see. I wish they would just. All right, anyway. All right, Weinstein. Ooh, man. 23 years. That's what he got. Harvey Weinstein was sentenced to 23 years in prison on Wednesday, which is today, for sexual assault. His next stop is likely to be a maximum security prison an hour north of Lower Manhattan courtroom. in which the punishment was pronounced. Weinstein, who became an emblem of the Me Too movement as waves of women accused him of harassing them or attacking them over the years, was convicted last month of forcing oral sex on production assistant Miriam Haley and raping Jessica Mann, who wanted to be an actor. The maximum total penalty was 29 years. Weinstein, 67, has asked the state of New York Supreme Court Justice James Burke for 5, citing his age and failing health. Weinstein, who has been jailed since the conviction, arrived in court shortly after 9:30 a.m. in New York, handcuffed to his wheelchair. Court officers removed the cuffs as sentencing got underway. Weinstein compares hashtag MeToo to the McCarthy era. Interesting comparison. Harvey Weinstein addressed the court in his final moments before sentencing, warning of a crisis in America that is compared to the McCarthy era. I'm worried about this country, he began. We are going through a crisis right now in this country. It started basically with me. Well, it didn't start with Harvey. That's me saying that. I was the first example. You weren't the first example of now there are men, many men, who have been accused of abuse, something I think none of us understood. Well, look, I don't know what happened with the Harvey Weinstein case. I really don't. I don't know what happened, really, with the Bill Cosby case. I don't know what's happening what's his name? R. Kelly. Here's my take on all that stuff and more. Particularly men, and I'm going to throw Michael Jackson in there, too. If you are male or female, but particularly men, with a high profile, and you're wealthy with a high profile, in my opinion, you should not, and this is classism, but in this case, in my book, classism fits. Don't mess with anybody that's below, who's not in your comfort zone. I'm not going to use the word below. Who's not in your socioeconomic bracket. All those guys, Michael Jackson, R. Kelly, Bill Cosby, they had a lot of people that were trying to get on, well, basically, get on the come up. Now, once again, I don't know what really happened. But typically, when you get involved with people that are not on your level, socially, economically speaking, this has nothing to do with character. And then maybe it does. But put it this way, the nail that sticks out gets hit. From Bill Cosby, he, in my opinion, if you're going to step out on your wife, do it with somebody who had just as much to lose as you do. R. Kelly, same thing. If you are R. Kelly, if you're going to be dating people, date somebody, a Whoopi Goldberg or a Katie Couric or Hillary Clinton, you got to date somebody who has just as much to lose as you did. That's the common, the way I look at it, the way LA's looking at it. The common denominator with all these dudes, and even if they're not high profile, is they were messing around with women or, and I'm let me use a different word. They had some type of social interaction with women. That was not on your level of achievement. Like I say, I don't know what happened in any of those cases. But the people that accused them had absolutely nothing to lose. They didn't have anything to lose. That's another common denominator. Nothing to lose. You, on the other hand, had to hire an expensive legal team. Now, I sort of agree with Harvey Weinstein when he says, now let me read what he says here. He says, I'm worried about this country. We are going through a crisis right now in our country. Now, I disagree with what he says. It basically started with me. No, Harvey, way before your case. And you can go on Facebook for this. And YouTube. On Facebook, there are dozens of groups of men across the color spectrum that live in westernized countries that are done with westernized women, particularly if they live in a western country. Dozens of them on Facebook alone. I can't, probably new groups forming every day. If you go on YouTube, there are videos uploaded every day. So a lot of men have claimed they're MGTOW. Men going their own way. Doesn't have anything to do with sexuality. It's just they don't want to be bothered. Now, this is the average Joe. The average Joe who has. So it didn't start with Weinstein. But he is right. The problem is rampant and is nationwide. But it goes beyond, like I say, I'm seeing Western countries. Two years ago, and here's an example, just in my life. 2 years ago, I was on a flight out of Beijing, China. Sitting next to me was this dude from Norway. He had been traveling. This was his third day of traveling. from Norway. Because he was done with Norwegian women. And then sitting across the aisle from me, Beijing, China, another American. Anyway, like I say, I don't know all the details of the Weinstein case and all this other stuff, but you got to be, it is a climate where you do, men, do have to be very careful in their dealings with women. It's almost to the point where you have to document meeting people. Anyway, I don't know where Robin's at, because she had a pretty busy day yesterday. Anyway, let me open the phone lines here. 314, your mic is on.
We won't, Joe. We won't, Joe. We won't, Joe.
He'll be back. I just had Robin. I don't know where she's at today.
I had some more stuff to tell on to put on the layout there for Joe. Y'all muted me. Kicked my butt out in the cold.
Well, I wouldn't say that. We were trying to get people to call, you know, not trying to get them to call them, trying to, you know, people that had their mic, you know, want to speak.
Yeah, I know.
So that,
you know, he was talking about the FBI and Jack Johnson. Well, see, Trump pardoned Jack Johnson, probably because the way the FBI had been treating him. Obama wouldn't do it, probably because the way the FBI was working on his behalf to go after Trump. Boy, I can put this stuff together,
I didn't know that pardon Johnson either.
Huh?
I didn't know that he gave Jack Johnson a pardon.
Yeah, he did.
Mm-hmm. That's good to know. Good to know.
But everybody's starting to get into these tiny houses now. Amazon even selling them.
Yeah, they do. And
Home Depot, they taking those little small sheds they got.
Oh yeah,
only
yeah.
Thing
they,
I don't like.
They'll finance those, but then now the key is all that is. Before you even buy those things or build one or have one built, make sure in that particular municipality where you are that you can legally put up those structures.
Well, they're going to have to start releasing. They're going to have to start lessening those requirements. Then Japan have those bolt together domes that you can put up within. Heck, 4 hours, probably.
Oh, you talking about geodesic?
No, they monolithic domes. They're not geo, they're monolithic. But they have some that bolt together. Now, well, I'll take that back. I guess you can't, they domes, but they're not geo. Now, monolithic domes have the ones that you build in place with the spray and aggregate onto a airform, and actually I like theirs the best, but you can't move them.
Japan also has what do you call it? I guess some people call them pod motel, no, hotels or
Monolithic got those. They build them in Russia.
Cap, yeah, you see they got a Russian?
I've seen Russians do that. But, you know, that stuff is not difficult. You know, I was a guy I know posted something about this two children and mother homeless. And I told them, watch out, build these people some of these small, tiny homes for temporary occupancy until they get on their feet. And be truthful with you, heck, it's the way to go. Once you get to a certain age, if you're raising kids, I don't know, that's a different thing. If you're going to raise kids, you got to have, if you're going to have a tiny house, you got to have some outdoor space for them kids to be able to run around in.
I was watching quite a few videos on glamping and some people that homestead. And like this one video is a 2,000 square foot home made out of basically canvas tent material. But it's got, but you go step on the inside, it's got air conditioning, heating, insulated, nice living room, everything stylish. But it's just not brick and mortar.
Yeah, mono has.
But of course, now it's a whole area. Because once
you have a whole.
Yeah, a lot of this
stuff.
Watch where you.
Go ahead.
You need to check and see wherever you live at. Check where you're at first, and can you do this? And then if you can, you know, go ahead on and do it. So, but you do have people that are moving. So I noticed it's a trend out there for sure. Trend out
they
there.
They got houses
sure.
Around 1,200 square feet. That's what this one developer that I know he's looking for to make a offer to the city to build some affordable homes, eh? Well, to develop, well, I guess you can say regentrify our area with homes built on the specification of 1,200 square feet. Working with it. It still is.
All right, well,
with
we got a real quiet studio here today, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to because, like I say, Darlene Lewis is waiting on that delivery that should be in today. So I'm going to be back tomorrow. We'll go, and I'm going to find her. I don't know where Robin is today. So we'll be back tomorrow. And then we can take care of a few things today and build on our momentum. Everyone have a good rest of the day.